okay. 30 centimetres away from winning the game against Adelaide. Not Adelaide, Brisbane. Getting the games confused between two different weekends. Bring you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City for this week. We're at David Farrington Park again. It's been probably about 3 or 4 months since we've been here.
I think so.
Yeah. It was kind of the start of the ISPS Handa Premiership, as we called it back then.
Yeah.
And now we're at the business end of the Handa Premiership. So
Handy Prem.
Jose will be jumping on a little bit later once training's wrapped up, and we're going to chat about the Handy Grand Final that's coming up on Sunday, which is going to be very exciting.
Handy Grandy Final.
Handy Grandy Final. Wow.
Handy GF.
Grandy Handy.
Don't go there, you're going to go somewhere bad.
Yeah, I realised as I said it, although maybe I knew what I was saying. The Phoenix played a game, and they didn't lose.
Hey, come on, let's be honest. They played their best game of the season.
You say that, but we did win a game 5-2.
But we all agreed at that point in time
we shouldn't have won 5-2.
Perth was pants and not because we were particularly good.
I think, this game, it was certainly refreshing to watch the team play like that after all the shit we've seen from them this season. Like, that was actually a positive mindset performance, and that's what I think we haven't seen under the previous regime, and something that Greeny's managed to instill with them. And that's the best part about what I saw on Sunday.
Yeah, they showed they were willing, and that's pretty much the benchmark. Well, not the benchmark. That's the pass mark for us at this part of the season. It's just show you're willing, just go out, give your guts, and just do the simple things right. And if you get beat, that's fine. Especially when you're all 12 years old.
Well, if you look at, I think Piney made a really good point on Twitter, and I think this is the key that Greeny brings to the table more than anything else, is he's taken the guys that are established pros who were obviously not of the mindset to play and got them in the mindset to play, saying this is where you need to be, get your head in here. And he's taken the guys who are on the outer and he's got them to believe them that they are capable of playing at this level, and he's taken the kids who are stepping up and instilled belief in them that they should be there and to put a performance out there, and it's worked. And it just shows what a good man manager can do when he surrounds himself with people who can play, do tactical football.
We've spoken about this before, and it's the Graham Arnold thing. Like, it's the Graham Arnold family belief, and I totally think that Chris Greeninger would run his football club like it's a family, and everyone is appreciated in it. And the A-League, when everyone's such on a such equal level in terms of salary cap and all that kind of thing, there's so much balance in the A-League that you need every advantage you can get. And man management is totally one of those things, and that's what we saw on Sunday.
I don't know that it was. I totally agree that Greeny would be that sort of manager, that he'd be trying to foster that family mentality, that club. He even spoke about it on the pod, the feeling of back when he was playing and what a tight group they were, and you know, turning Westpac into a fortress. But I think in this case, you know, because of this short turnaround, I think it was probably more just that he removed the fear that they had of that. You know, when you get bad performances, they're stacking up, it becomes this fear factor going into a game. You're just like, oh God, what's going to go wrong now? Oh, and you can see it, just the confidence goes. And I think he removed that fear from them. They weren't scared about losing. They weren't scared about anything. And they were just focusing on playing the football.
Yeah, you at the top of the podcast said, Cam, that this was an excellent game. I think it was an excellent...
I said it was our best performance of the season.
Okay, yep, sorry, best performance of the season. I think it was our best performance of the season offensively. I think defensively, there is still a lot to be worked on. We were not defensively sound. I mean, Brisbane had just as many opportunities as we did.
I think that's what made it such an entertaining game.
Totally, but entertaining football doesn't necessarily mean good football.
No, I totally agree with you. The one thing you should look at is the majority of the chances, and the seven for both teams, were taken from well outside the box. There was not a lot of in-box opportunity for either team, particularly in the first half. So whilst I agree there are still things to work on defensively, I don't actually think it was as bad as you may think, purely because the shots weren't high percentage opportunities in the box, that bar one or two that Ollie has to make saves to.
The goals were. All four goals were.
I just have to remember back to the goals.
So Brett Holman's goal, where he's free to back post. Good finish.
It's not a high-quality opportunity, though. He's just taken it with a plomb. It was a really nicely taken goal.
I think it was a nicely taken, but I think that was a great opportunity.
Oh, yeah, it was, but you would usually not back an A-League player to be able to volley like that into that part of the goal. I don't think that's the kind of goal we see in the A-League too often.
You shouldn't be leaving the guy free on the back post.
100%.
If you were asking me if Holman's going to be making those more often than he is going to miss them, I think that's true. And I think the same with Macarone and Burns and Krishna. So strikers I'd be expecting to. If it's centre-back, you know, that was the Hamill factor.
See, I would still dispute it. I don't think the A-League strikers will hit the target with those more often than they miss.
Okay, then Logan's goal, that was just a poor defensive work from Brisbane to make it so easy for Logan to score.
Logan's done really, really well.
He has done well.
He's got in between two defenders to get his head to that and placed it just to the side of the keeper, and he was close enough and had it with enough power the keeper didn't have time to react. It was just a very nicely taken goal.
Yeah, he's made a good run. He's split the centre-back and the fullback. That nice angle run, the kind of very smelty style one, just get in off in behind that inside shoulder where the fullback can't see you, and he can't tell you the centre back to cut across, or you to, you know, your fullback to cut across. I think that was great. Not great defending. I think it was Hingett turned the wrong way and turned his back to Rogerson and let him do that. But you know, he got in the right spot. And he stuck it in without any troubles.
Take the opportunity that's
there.
Yeah,
I mean, he's not a big boy, and if he gets his head to it, he's done a couple of things right. Maybe someone else has done something wrong.
His performance in general was actually pretty good.
No stepovers.
He actually played a lot more focused, I feel, than he had done in his other performances for the team.
Like he was actually playing to a team game plan, I think, rather than playing to a highlight reel.
Yep. I think that's entirely fair.
That was a ball hitting the club room, so that's not going to be a goal on Sunday.
Get him out now. Yeah, don't save him for Sunday. I think it was a better performance from Logan.
It wasn't the performance I was expecting from Logan.
Not at all. I think the one thing we actually missed in that lineup was the pace of Roy to get in behind, because we played long quite often, particularly from Ollie. I wonder if there was a bit of nerves in the early doors from Ollie as well, being his first performance. But there was a lot of long ball to try and get in behind the defence, and we didn't have the pace of Roy to make that work quite as well.
I don't know that it was necessarily to get him behind so much as it was they were putting a bit of pressure on him and not giving him an outlet.
Maybe I'm giving a bit much credit there.
Oh, no, it's just you're not giving quite enough to Brisbane, I think. They were deliberately kind of pressuring him a little more than they might a more experienced keeper, which I think was sound tactic. His clearances were all good. Only problem was that second goal.
I think he's got a little unlucky there, because the one mistake he did make in the entire game was that punch, and it's cost us a goal. And there have been plenty of other opportunities or occasions this season where our keepers have made an error that haven't cost us goals. Yep. So he has put in a performance which was decent. I don't think he'll be dropped for next week on that performance.
It wasn't the worst goalkeeping performance we've seen this year.
Not even close.
By a long way.
And he actually made a particularly one save. A snap save.
Oh, the one down
ground
to his right.
That was a very good save. So
he wouldn't have seen much of that at all.
No, this was not a game that he wins a contract on. This was not a game that he loses a contract on.
Not even close. I give him a pass mark for the game.
Yeah.
Going off the performances that we've seen from the rest of the team this season.
That last goal, I haven't actually watched it again, but at the time I remember thinking that we were very lucky, because it looked like the ball hit in the club rooms. It looked like someone's
going to tell them to start aiming for the goal.
Yeah.
A little bit of tactics from the bouncer.
Yeah.
Balcony.
I think it was Parkhouse almost handled his ball on the line to stop that initial shot.
You wouldn't have got a handball from that. His hands were by his side.
All right.
It was ball to hand. If it hit it, I don't know. I couldn't see it. I thought it
was hip or leg. Right. But it was, he did everything he could, and it wasn't doing anything.
I just
right.
like in the VAR era where you slow things down to an inch, I thought that if that didn't go in, we could have seen a red card and penalty.
Wouldn't have been a red, would it?
Yeah, handball on the line would be red.
Yeah, because it would be deliberate and a stop.
It's not a footballing challenge.
Oh, yeah, true.
It's not a footballing challenge, even though that's not a term, but it's not a footballing challenge. So,
yeah, there was shows the benefit of having a guy on the line, though. Because Ollie did set players on both posts. Yeah. So when he did come for it, the initial shot didn't go in. It was very well blocked by Parkhouse. Mm. And so again, unfortunate it's fallen to a striker, but that's what happens when you're bottom of the league. Stuff like that doesn't fall for you.
To be fair, that's something that I'm that flapping that he did was... That was more troubling. Yeah, he got a little bit of a push from one of the Brisbane players. But I'll be honest with you, you know, you're going to get a push if you're the keeper and it's
you'll be stronger than that.
But the he was, even though he was given a bit of a push, he misjudged it horribly.
Yeah, he got nowhere near it.
Nowhere near it.
Yeah, so that,
that's
that
a
was
real, poor. Real problem.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that set piece you can practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
Hopefully he can fix that up, doesn't dent his confidence too much, and then he can turn around and, and hope and build on it.
What also is good, it's great to see AK score.
Yeah, I messed up the order of things. Yeah.
With his foot.
Yeah, it was.
With his foot.
Yeah, it hasn't seen too many of those this season, but I think it's just great for his confidence. A beautiful through ball.
Who was that?
Lujic.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. And it was a really nice run between the defenders.
Yeah.
That's AK why he wanted Lujic there.
AK doesn't have loads of pace, but he didn't need to because the ball was just on a plate for him. He gets into the box and slots it past the keeper. It was just really nice to take and goal.
What I loved most about it was he's not quick, but what he does is he gets his shoulder in front and he gets basically his body across and he runs the right line and makes sure that the defender can't get that ball unless it takes him out, in which case he's getting a red. So it's really good attacking.
This is one of those chances where you go, oh, this is a really good chance. Even though there were so many defenders so close, it's the way that the run went and the ball together, and then the finish, obviously, it was,
really nice finish.
I want to see us score more of those goals.
Yeah. It was good to see that hit back. So we went down 1-0 to that first goal, and then it was hit back straight away.
Two minutes later.
And that's exactly what you wanted, and it showed that the heads didn't go down. They just kept implementing what Greeny wanted them to implement, and it worked. It worked very, very well.
I preferred when we were down, to be honest. I liked that 2 minutes because then I just didn't care anymore. Mm. It was when we went down and when we went up that the belief creeps back in, and that's the worst part. I was like, maybe we can win this. And then we get to it, and I went, nope, we can't. But for 2 minutes, I was very comfortable. It was normal circumstances resumed.
I actually feel about this game the way I felt after our very first game of the season, where we come out of it go, that actually showed a lot of promising signs.
I can't remember the first game of the season.
So it was a 1-1 draw with Adelaide, and Vidasic scored with his head. Both goals were scored very early in the game, and it ended up being 1-1.
Oh, yeah.
The teams played out for the draw at the end.
Oh, of course they did. Yeah. I remember now. Thank you for reminding me.
They were blowing empty.
Yeah, right. I felt the same way as then. It's like, well, there's definitely promising signs. Greeny obviously has a plan. That plan worked very well against Brisbane. Not perfectly, obviously, and there's still things to work on, but there are signs there that if he happened to manage to get his pro in the next 3 or 4 months, which obviously won't likely happen, or if they do keep him on as assistant, then there's something there that can be built.
Well, he can't be assistant as per the early rules because if you are not an Australian and you need to have a pro license to be an assistant now, the fact he's naturalised in New Zealand may help him in that case. We might be able to make a case that he's actually a local. We're just a New Zealand local rather than an Australian local. Given what he said to us last week about how the FFA have the pro license on hiatus, and given he's on the wait list for that pro license, I think there might be a case to ask the question. Whether they would issue dispensation to be head coach or not, I don't know. But given that there's been no opportunity for him to do that course through FFA over the last...
It'd be a fair argument.
2 years. And if they had offered it, he would have done it. So maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I want to come back a little bit shorter term than next year and, you know, whether he gets pro license or not. Because we all like the guy, and I think that, you know, we might be a little bit biased, you know, as to, you know, him going on further.
Yeah, he hasn't just worked his wonders on the team. He's worked it on us as well.
Yeah, no, he's one of the nicest guys, and that's I'm concerned that at least I'm a little biased about it.
But we have seen three solid performances that are building from the team.
And we've seen him do this before with – picking up the team partway through a bad season, so he's always got that new coach bounce as well. But what I liked most about this performance was the areas where we showed a little bit of weakness or openings were towards the end of the game through that defensive midfield. The game opened up a lot and the midfield defence disappeared and it just was backline against backline, looking like an under-10s game. We get Matty Redenton back and we know he's going to run the full 90 and he's going to be putting in that defensive effort for that. You put him back on the side, all of a sudden that tidies up a bit more and probably your distribution gets a little bit better in there as well, because I don't know that Lujic while he's a better attacking, you know, final third passer, his positional play, I don't think, is as good as Matty Redington. The other thing is we get a fresh Rory Krishna. And all of a sudden, we've got one more attacking weapon. We've got Sarpreet back as well. So two more attacking weapons, and our midfield defence tidies up.
That's the thing, is it was always going to be the midfield in this game that was the most lacking due to the international window. It wasn't the back line. The back line, we had replacements. We didn't really have the replacements to fill in properly. And so it makes sense that the defensive midfield waned a bit as the game went on, because there was nobody to bring on. Everyone was on the park already who could do it.
And Monty had already gone off injured, so you'd already taken away any other option you really had in the midfield to juggle things around.
Didn't bringing Parkhouse on make a big difference and help the team?
It actually did.
Which is a weird thing to say about Adam Parkhouse.
Yeah. Because he was played on the left.
And that's an indictment on Monty Patterson.
No, I thought Monty looked pretty decent before he went off, but I think the issue was more that we kept using Parkhouse the wrong way.
Well, we didn't. Kalisic did.
Kalisic did. Because he showed us enough when he plays on the left-hand side, he can actually get up and down, he can put in the effort, and he's good with a cross with his left foot. He has no right foot at all. No. So why he was playing on the right, just ridiculous. As soon as you play him back on the left, he's going, oh, well, I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
I think that was brilliant.
I think we should also talk about the individual performance of Nathan Burns in
Correct.
That game.
Yeah.
Because he was phenomenal. And I think it was pre-Asia Cup Nathan Burns when he was playing for us.
I'm not going to go that far.
He was getting up there for those performances.
That single performance was on par with a performance from before the Asian Cup, Nathan Burns. But to say Nathan Burns is back to pre-Asian Cup form.
Well, I'm not saying he's back there. That performance is up to that level.
I'll let you have that. No, I was really impressed with Nathan Burns here. Like, even... like Greeny said last week, even though there was no goal, and we came ridiculously close to having a goal from Nathan Burns.
Fantastic save.
It was awesome. I didn't realise it was a save until after the game.
Neither did I, and I was standing right there, and I still didn't realise he'd managed to save
it. Yeah, because he'd hit it so freaking hard.
Yeah, and it was going in. It only just went out, and so it was a touch.
But, actually, I actually quite liked the VAR chant coming from the Fever. And I was standing in line with it, and I knew it hadn't crossed the line, so I was all good, but it was just still quite amusing hearing the VAR.
I knew that it wasn't over the line from 100 metres away even. But that performance from Nathan Burns, just the way he was getting involved in the game, picking up the ball, what he was doing with it was excellent. And if he can keep doing that for these last three games of the season, I think that having him around next season is going to be the difference between finishing 7th or 8th and finishing 4th to 6th, which is going to be great for us.
Yep.
What I really liked about it was, despite his, you know, him not being a natural 10 and finding that, you know, the really good positions to just for the ball to fall into, he found space every time he was picking up the ball. He got himself in between the lines really nicely, and the amount of time he had on the ball because he was finding that space, as soon as he gets to turn and run with that ball, he is so hard to stop.
He really is.
He runs at such good pace with the ball in front of him. It's brilliant to watch. You don't see many players that can do that. You know, you can imagine basically there's the shorter statute. Kind of, I hate to go to Messi, but you know, that sort of guy that
go to Rojas instead.
Yeah, Rojas is another guy, someone that can run at pace and keep the ball nice and tight and maneuver with the ball at pace. That he is great at.
I think he had an advantage got the advantage of a fluid forward line, because him, Rogerson, Lewicz, and Parkhouse, Patterson to a smaller extent.
And then Roy when he came on.
They were all rotating positions quite frequently. It was very fluid. There was no, apart from AK playing up top, because that's his position, and even he was coming up in wider positions at times, the positioning for them, they were rotating around. So he was running at different guys. So when one guy starts to get used to running, it's used to what he's doing, he can go to a different place and run at someone else. And it just keeps them on their toes and guessing the whole time.
Yeah, I did notice that that Rogerson would pop up on either side occasionally, and you're kind of like, what's he doing? And then you realise that everyone else has kind of made allowances for it. So that was, I mean, I don't know how Greeny convinced everyone that that's what was going to be happening, but that's a quick turnaround to do that kind of rotational.
It's a very good piece of management.
Jose, you've just walked into the room and joined us. Thank you for coming along and doing another one of these.
No problems. Welcome to David Gash.
Yeah, thank you. We've had a couple of balls.
Yeah, could you tell the boys to keep the balls a bit lower next time?
Sorry for that.
It's fine. No, as long as they hit the target on Sunday, I'll be happy.
I'm expecting him to say, Patrick to say, was that Watto?
No, I don't think it was Watto.
Yes, you do.
No, because Pat had said it wouldn't have hit the clubhouse if it was Watto. It's okay. You can ignore that.
You really can.
I'm staying silent. Jose is staying silent on that one. we just talked about how the Phoenix game and how we looked much better attacking and there was a bit of confidence back. Did you see the game on Sunday?
Yeah, I caught. So the game had already started by the time I got home. But I agree. I think, you know, the last couple of weeks, there's obviously an air of confidence in the players, and you know, they're going out there and expressing themselves, which is great to see. And you know, some players that perhaps were, you know, a few weeks ago looking a little bit flat or, you know, not that kind of focused and intense, all of a sudden there seems to be a bit of an air in the step of everybody. Mm. So yeah, look, the, you know, whilst I'm sure, you know, knowing Greeny, would have liked to have picked up, you know, some wins, and they probably could have and should have in the past couple of weeks, I'm sure he'll be, you know, delighted with the way the guys have responded.
All right, let's just blast the rest of the A-League round before we jump back to the Handy Prem. But the Sydney FC had a last-gasp win over the Mariners. Matt Simon in the 93rd minute secured the 3 points.
How much must that hurt?
It hurt the Mariners a lot. Ninkovic got the goal scrum away in the first half. Jake McGing equalised, and then Matt Simon, as I said, at the end.
McGinge,
yes. Melbourne City had a 3-0 win over the Wanderers. Goals to Fornaroli, Jacobson and Stefan Mork, running at a pretty comprehensive win for them. I missed a game at the start of the round because I scrolled down. It was 5-2 Adelaide over the Newcastle Jets, which basically scuppers Newcastle Jets' premiership hopes. But they kind of romped home in the last kind of 30 minutes of the game.
Is it just me? Does Ernie finish
seasons badly?
Yes,
because he did that with us too. Yeah,
but he's every time I remember a victory kind of fell flat once or twice way back when.
And then the final game of the round was Perth Glory, who had a 1-0 win over the Melbourne Victory.
How?
It doesn't even tell me who scored the goal. So
no, that result is the one that means we can no longer make the playoffs mathematically.
That's the result that means that we can't make the playoffs.
Mathematically.
All right.
Yeah.
And how bad do you have to be to lose to Perth at the moment?
Garbage. Well, no, but they're actually bouncing back a little bit.
A little bit. Like, that is not hard. That is a low bar, mate.
Yeah. So the way that things have gone is the Phoenix can only finish 9th or 10th now, but only 2 points behind the Mariners. So a couple of wins and you'd think they would probably do it. So that's what Green has to play for, which is I like finishing not last. Do you like finishing not last?
I'd be keen to not have the wooden spoon. That'd be nice, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump back to New Zealand and to the Handy Prem, where down here on Saturday we witnessed Team Wellington get a...
Sunday.
I keep saying Saturday and I mean Sunday. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, Sunday we saw T-Dubs get a 1-0 win over Canterbury United. I think in the end it was a little bit of a relief that the final whistle came. But before we give our thoughts, how did you feel like the game went, Jose?
Yeah, delighted to obviously win the game, and you know, with that getting the final and importantly also secure the O-League football for next year.
Yeah, that's a big one.
So that's obviously, you know, great for the club. But yeah, I think probably you know, as I said after the game, it was a game where we showed a, you know, two personalities. So I thought the first half, you know, after a great start from them and surviving, you know, the early scare, we got a bit of luck off the woodwork there. We responded really well, and you know, similar to the game we had down there a couple of weeks ago, we took one, but you know, really dominated and probably, you know, could have gone into halftime 2-0 or 3-1.
Yeah,
you know, the way you look at it. And second half, after I'd watched it, wasn't as bad as I thought it was on the line emotionally, but
probably
look, I think we
nerves, I guess.
I think we showed, you know, the other side of our game, where, you know, against an aggressive physical team playing really direct and throwing everything at us, we, you know, especially across the back and the midfield too, rolled their sleeves up and dug in and defended, you know, fantastically. So yeah, it was good to see both of those sides of the team. As a coach, you'd always like a little bit more control and things easy going. But look, Canterbury, you know, were unbeaten in 7, 8, 9 games, I think it was, and it was never going to be an easy task. So yeah, it was look, delighted.
You mentioned the first kind of 15 minutes of the game, which seemed to be all Canterbury. There was a couple of chances moving forward, but is it just a relief to weather that storm that the boys managed to, through a little bit of luck and some hard work, managed to get themselves back into the game and composed again?
Yeah, of course. Look, I think they, you know, especially playing at Davie F when teams are coming and sort of high pressing us, obviously they know that we like to try and, you know, build the play out from the back, and, you know, perhaps it was, you know, caught us a little bit off guard, or we weren't quite ready for it. And I think it was noticeable, you know, probably across the back line and those players on the next lines that we weren't sort of adjusting quite quick enough to be able to do that. But as I said, look, credit to them, and Willie obviously came out with that plan, and as you said, that sometimes you need the woodwork or a big save or a big tackle to kind of turn the switch on, and yeah, it was good to see that we did that after.
Someone that stood out for me, even if we completely exclude the fact that he scored a goal, was Roy Kiara, who through the whole game just did that role that he does so well, to the best I've seen all season.
Yeah, it's you know, he's a player that's got that X factor, and you know, actually last year in the O League, it was that similar performance he had for Yengen when we watched him when they were playing Bar in the other game, and obviously he stood out, and I saw some qualities there that to bring him over to Wellington. And yeah, I think we're now towards this business end of the season, you know, starting to see him step up, and albeit being a defender, he's naturally an attacker. He plays wide or up front for New Caledonia. You can probably see some of those traits, but look, for the way that we play, for him, the way he carries the ball out, you know, his passing range, being able to dribble past players and engage other players on the other team, it's a real weapon for us in terms of the way we build our attacks.
One of the key players who was missing was Justin Gully. At what point last week did you learn that he was going to be travelling over to Spain and wouldn't be available on Sunday?
I think it was Saturday. I think it was the Saturday.
All right, that's not as bad as I thought.
No, I think it was. So, obviously he was on the standby list, and I had a call from Fritz, who's obviously already in Europe, and with the pullout in that position, he was the next natural one to come in, and obviously would have been nice for him to have got on, but look, the fact that he's on the radar and been in there and speaking to him tonight, had a really good week over there and got good feedback. So I know, great for Justin.
So he's back and ready to play on the weekend?
Yeah, so he arrived this morning, Wednesday morning, so just eased back in tonight. And yeah, he's fortunate, I don't think he's working tomorrow, and then obviously has the Friday off. So
good,
he can sort of make sure he gets back and does his recovery and nice and fresh for the weekend. So no, it's great.
Did he bring the duty-free Toblerones for after the season?
I didn't ask him, actually.
The season goes on for a long time after Sunday.
Hopefully, that's the plan. A few more weeks for the season.
Yeah.
See, my standout from the weekend was Mario Barcia. He is not the guy that does all the flashy stuff, and those kind of players do get missed a lot. There was a hell of a midfield battle, and I thought everything about his game, his tackling, which we know is aggressive, and he never shies away from it, but he wins the ball, he distributes quickly, he's always in space, and then in closing down his defensive mid, he is always quick into position. I know his performance particularly, I think, was a reason why we got back into it after those first 15 minutes and then didn't concede late.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think Mario's this year kind of gone up another level from last season. He's, in a position, a complex position in what we're trying to do with that pressing and also trying to help with the build-up play. He's really taken a lot of things on board this year, and I think he's actually only been, he's been booked twice this year.
I was about to ask.
That's it. He's only been booked. I believe so. I think he's only been booked twice.
Yeah.
So again, that's he's worked on that, and as you said, he's still got that aggressiveness about him, but he's doing it in a more controlled and skilled way. So, you're actually recovering the ball instead of just tackling and
foul.
Yeah, exactly.
Relieving the pressure.
Yeah.
Speaking of that press, did you see any of the All Whites game? They were kind of employing a triangle press or something. What did you think of it? Because, I mean, we don't know a tremendous amount about that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was obviously, a shame I wasn't able to be over there to know exactly like the finer details. But yeah, I think the essence is to have that high press and, try and lock teams onto one side of the field and, use the sideline as a defender also. So with more teams looking to build the play, have more possession, try and draw teams out, it's a ploy that's being seen a lot more by a lot of teams, trying to press and win the ball higher. against the good teams, it's obviously a risk because you're exposing a lot of space behind, and have, and trying to do that as a unit is hard work, but also takes a lot of concentration. So yeah, it was a little bit hard to see with the angle of the camera, yeah, and the camera work as well. So but yeah, no, it was, you know, some encouraging signs for the first game anyway. So
obviously there's now a grand final against Auckland City, as it has been for the past three seasons. Did we lose one before? No,
River.
Yes, I think every time we played in the grand final, including when we've lost, it's been against Auckland.
Yeah,
there was actually, I think the previous season to us winning for the first time was a Hawke's Bay Auckland final.
It was, because we lost to Hawke's Bay in the semis.
Yeah, but still qualified for the O-League, and the year before that we lost to Auckland.
Thanks, Stato. That's more information than I need for the question. It's another final against Auckland City. There's been two games against Auckland City this year. One was right at the start of the season, which was 3-1. The other was a nil-all draw. Can you use either of those games with all the personnel changes and the tactical changes and everything for both teams, can you use those as stepping stones or platforms to build a tactical? Don't tell us too much because we don't want Auckland hearing, but yep, can you use those games at all, or is it very much we just have to approach this game as a one-off against a very good team that we know a little bit about but can't really nail down what they're going to do?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think certainly the previous meeting up there, the more recent one, you know, being able to use the things that we did well. Mm-hmm. You know, we know Auckland as us. We know each other inside out, and it tends to be, you know, those small details that make the difference. So it's, you know, it's looking at that last game. We had a lot of the ball at Kiwitia, which, you know, a lot of teams don't have, and I think kind of made a statement, you know, from that perspective. But, you know, we only created a handful of half chances, and, you know, this week we want to try and dominate more in attack and, you know, try and be on top of them a little bit more with the ball, not just without it. So there's that preparation from the video perspective, but, you know, also looking at their recent games, you know, against the Phoenix, obviously last week against Eastern Suburbs, and, you know, I'm sure they're doing exactly the same, having looked at the Canterbury game and see what caused us problems. So
that's the downside of it being live on TV.
That's it. And look, but the beauty is, and not just for us but for the league, is, you know, after each game, matches have to be uploaded within a 24-hour window. Coaches have access to those games, and, you know, it means it raises the quality of the league. You know, the preparation, teams can prepare better, train better, and I think, you know, we've seen that this
all right,
year.
So you as clubs get access to the full game.
Yeah.
From, oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So it's a good, you know, I think it happens in the other leagues professionally as well. So yeah, as of it was in last year, and then yeah, so it's a great tool to be able to prepare for the week.
That's excellent. If those could be on the internet for the masses to watch as well, because we want to watch those too.
And
if
you listen, there is Sky, Patrick's rant at NZF.
No, Sky Sport. So yes, I'm looking forward to Sunday.
Patrick's actually going.
I'm going.
Yes,
Dave, that's who's right here tonight, is going, and a couple of other of our friends, Tracy and Boxy, all heading up. Dave and I are doing the fly in and out on Sunday.
Brilliant.
So I think there might be a couple of others going as well. I think Dwayne might be heading up as well.
Okay, maybe. My flight back is at 9 p.m. So if you could win it within 90 minutes, that would be excellent for getting back to the...
We'll make sure we try and do that.
I'll take a win an extra time. I'll take a win in penalties, but they make it a lot harder to get to the airport on time. The best of luck for Sunday. We'll move on to talking about the All Whites game a little bit now. You've jumped ahead slightly.
Sorry.
But
the All Whites... excited.
Yeah, the Whites had a 1-0 loss to Canada. We've only seen bits of it.
We're going to talk to Jose about the new set.
This is where I'm leading. This is where I'm leading, yeah. The Whites had a 1-0 loss to Canada. We've only seen bits of it because of the camera angle, and I don't think any of us have had the time to sit down again and watch the whole thing, perhaps except for Jose. I think from what I've read from others is that this was a promising performance from a very young team. And like we said last week, there's nothing right on the result, and it's good to see a bunch of youngsters, and Justin Gully included, getting a chance to go and camp with the All Whites.
There was a couple of good highlights. McGlinchey hitting the post from a very nice shot from outside the box, and then a minute later hitting it, apparently it was McGlinchey. I didn't identify the player myself, but apparently hitting it with his head as well.
Yep.
Ball on the post, not his head on the post, I should clarify. And then there was Brock's actually scoring, but being ruled offside. There was one camera, so we can't really tell whether it was offside, how close it was. Is, you know, I'm going to have to...
Running VAR for one camera is a bit hard, I think.
And so shaky cam as well, my God.
So give the lino a bit of benefit of the doubt there. I think he was probably onside, but, you know, I am wearing white glasses. So, what I saw, I was quietly impressed. Thought Crocombe could have been better, to be honest, but again, it's his first start. It's his first game, I think, first cap. And
it was windy as all hell, too.
Yeah, it was. And so maybe cut a bit of slack. It was a decent performance from what was a very experimental team.
Obviously, we've got one of the All Whites assistant coaches sitting at the table with us right now. You weren't there, but have you heard back about how the camp went and whether Fritz got what he wanted out of being in camp for a week and playing a game?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the important thing was to, you know, meet those players for the first time and, you know, start to get across some of those messages in terms of, you know, the processes and the playing style over. And, you know, that will obviously take time. I think we saw it agree in that first half. You could kind of see you know, the strengths and what the team was trying to do on the field with and without the ball. And but I think all in all, it was an encouraging camp. And, you know, bar, you know, a couple of injuries, like Adam obviously during the game, which is unfortunate, and, you know, obviously with Ryan with the little niggle, etc. But all in all, it's been really positive feedback.
And so as part of being always assistant coach, you're also coach of the under 17 team for the second time. How did that all come about? Was it part of the application process?
Yeah, it was once the applications once it opened, I thought, you know, it was the time felt right to throw my name back in the hat. You know, I've always you know, supported NZF and, you know, worked federations and, you know, national programs, and I was keen to get involved, whether that was the 20s or the 17s. And you know, part of the process of talking with Andreas about you know, developing, you know, the players moving forward, but it was also developing coaches. So you know, for myself and Des to be in that environment, you know, developing with someone of Fritz's experience, and, you know, so far all the conversations, Skype calls and everything we've had so far, it's been fantastic. So yeah, it's exciting.
And you're working with Paul Temple again, which I guess you've come up against him a little bit with you at Team Wellington and him at the Phoenix.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, no, look, it's great. Paul obviously knows, in terms of the under 17 space, knows that landscape inside out. Obviously, there's a number of those players in at the Phoenix, and, you know, we're obviously starting to see, you know, the fruition of those players come through. And, you know, a lot of those players, not just the Phoenix now, are either playing Central League, you know, Eastern Suburbs, another boy, Campbell Strong, who, you know, 15, 16 is coming on, you know, making his National League debut. So yeah, it's a really exciting age group, actually. So we've got a camp in April, first week of the school holidays, so it'll be nice to kind of get out on the grass and start working with them.
There's a couple of kids there. It almost feels like they'll be competing not so much for the 17s, but playing up a level to the 20s. So how does the negotiation go with Dears and Greeny?
We haven't had that just yet. As far as I'm aware, everyone, the players we selected for the camp, they're not in their eyes just yet. But look, I'm sure that's just kind of the nature of it. Although I do believe, you know, the FIFA rulings changes, and if you play up, then, you know, the following year you can't play play down.
You can't play a 20 World Cup and then get back to a 17 World Cup.
That's it. So, so their qualifying, etc., is actually falls before ours. So that kind of makes that a little bit complicated, but yeah, look, it's good. As I said, it's an exciting age group, the 17s, and, you know, you've got, see, the likes of, you know, Sarpri, Callum McCowart, those boys in Michael Wood, like 99 boys for the under 20. So it's future looks good, actually.
So between coaching Team Wellington and being an assistant coach down to the All Whites and being an under 17 coach, you've got a lot on your plate. How do you manage that? Obviously, it's kind of crunch time at the moment because all three things are happening at once. But how do you manage that?
I'm not sure, actually. My wife wants to know that as well, actually. So no, I won't spill the beans. But no, look, you make the time. I mean, it's, you know, football's it's a 24/7 job, and, you know, it's a case of, I think, with this season winding down, obviously there's a clash with the window now with the All Whites, but you know, moving forward for the next window, camps with the 17s, which are obviously school holidays and during the day, there's not too much of a clash there. But yeah, if there's any of you guys offering babysitting services once the Team Wellington season's over, it'll be
happily volunteer my services. I am very expensive.
Okay, great. Okay,
that rules Courtney, you out. Put her hand up just before.
Sorry, it's not Courtney, it's the bouncer. We've clarified this. She's the bouncer.
Yeah, well, there you go. She'll be able to tell them no, they're not getting in on those shoes.
Brilliant. Yes. So look, it's it's exciting time, and you know, this as well as you know, Team Wellington and just being part of the game, I think it's in a really exciting space. So
one thing about so you're kind of almost the entry point to the national program for youth football. What are you actually looking for when you're scouting players?
I think it's, you know, a lot of players, sorry, a lot of coaches or people say, look, of course, you know, it's players with good technique and they do this well in the game and, you know, they're fast and, you know, the obvious things. But I think it's, you know, those players that, you know, make good decisions, you know, their perception, their awareness of the surroundings, the way they interact with their teammates on the field. You know, it's kind of those, I guess, those subtle details that actually, you know, have massive influences on the game. And, you know, I use, I use someone like Sarpreet, for example. Yep. You know, he's always, from a young age, had those qualities. And, you know, there's no coincidence he looks at home playing in the A-League, you know, despite the young age. So, yeah, it's kind of those qualities that you think, look, longer term, 20s, all whites, you know, that's the way the modern game's going. So, yeah.
Follow-up question, if I might. So your age group is pretty much at a kind of a bit of a crux point for physical development. How much kind of emphasis are you putting on actual ability versus potential, and how long in the future are you looking as far as potential goes?
Yeah, it's like it's always with the World Cup cycles, it's the dual banding. So obviously, like, so for us, it's the 2002s, 2003s.
Yep.
So yeah, it's kind of finding that balance of, you know, in this camp we have a handful of those 03s, the younger you know, players that are showing those qualities, but also, you know, understanding that physically they still need to develop and mature as well. So yeah, it's you know, it's a hard task. It'll be easy to, you know, perhaps maybe just pick the big powerful athletic players that, yeah, you know, make a difference in, you know, within their own age group. But it's trying to balance that with, you know, all those other things that I mentioned, and I guess looking at the long game as well.
All right, Team Wellington, come back to there. If we look past the grand final, next weekend is a OFC semi-final, quarter-final against Leicester City Dwellers, which is also very exciting. It's that new stage that they've introduced this year. Previously it was straight into semi-finals, but do you look ahead to that on Sunday where you know that you've got potentially a bigger game in some ways, in some ways not, but is that part of the consideration, or is it very much one game this week, then we put that behind us and look to the game the next week?
Yeah, for the actual preparation and like the physical on the grass preparation, yeah, it's just, you know, solely looking at this week only, and then, you know, myself, my staff, like, we've already started to look at, you know, the group games from Lay when they played this year. So yeah, it means once we arrive next week, Tuesday, you know, we're starting to, you know, look, and the players can start to look and feel what, you know, they're going to be coming up against. So yeah, at the moment it's kind of focused on grand final, but excited to have another home Champions League game here at Davey F. You know, last year was a great occasion. We put on a good performance. There was a, you know, a big crowd as well. Yeah. So
those two games were excellent.
Yeah.
As well.
So, you know, hopefully it'll be the same. And look, Leigh City, albeit they came runner up in their group, they're a really skillful, dangerous team, with again a lot of, you know, PNG internationals, who, you know, of course, in the last cycle pushed NZ, you know, pretty close. We'll start to focus on them once we get Sunday out the way.
Is the semi-finals home and away?
Yep, so semi-finals home and away as well.
On the same side of the draw as Auckland?
Same side of the draw as Auckland.
Anything you'd like to comment about that?
No, so look, I mean, yeah, hopefully we just want to, you know, get into the semi-final.
Yeah.
And look, if it's Auckland, look, you know, let's not hide, playing at home. Us and Auckland are, of course, favourites. But, you know, football, it's a funny thing. So we just got to make sure we go out there and do the job.
The way I see it is, if you want to win the OFC Champions League, at some point you have to beat Auckland. And whether that's the semi-final or the final makes no difference, really.
Totally.
You're still going to be better than every other team in the competition. So yep.
I think the game against Marist over in the islands also showed that is every possibility that the island teams can get up.
Which is the great thing about football, isn't it?
They do have the ability to perform. So it's whilst you may be favourites, it's very easy to fall over against someone like Leigh City as well.
Mm, that's it. And, you know, we faced Marist, who, you know, were actually runner-up to Natalkin. Who Auckland are playing in the Solomon Warriors.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
apologies.
Yeah.
You know, so Solomon Warriors actually won that league, So you know, if you're going off of that, you know, that sort of perception, you know, certainly you can't take any team for granted.
Mm. Otago only lost 1-0 to Auckland as well, which is, you know, a surprise result, especially being a man down. So there's every possibility that they'll get up. So it's quite an interesting draw.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll leave that there for now, and we'll move over to Kiwis Overseas, brought to you by Optivise.
You got it right.
I got it right this week. We have a sponsor now, Jose. Someone does the work for Kiwis Overseas for us. It's great.
Yeah.
They sponsor us and us not having to use our time to research this.
This is 4 hours of my life every week I get back, so I'm more than happy for him to do this for us. This is brilliant.
Awesome. Excellent. All right, Cam, take us away.
Awesome. So, Katie Rood was in the starting lineup for Juventus and scored a brace as they won the Coppa Italia match against Novese 8-0. Roots first came as she controlled a lofted pass with her thigh before beating the keeper at the near post, and she added a second late in the match, heading home after finding space in the box following a short corner. Juventus followed up their cup win with a 5-0 victory against Sassuolo in the league, with Rudin as an unused sub. Everton made short work of WSL2 side Durham in the FA Cup quarterfinal, winning 6-1. Olivia Chance saved a shot, led to Everton's first goal, and she scored their second, sweeping a deflected cross high into the goal after a quick break. Everton's semi-final opponents will be record 14-time winners Arsenal, but they first they face a league trip to Sunderland on Friday. Reading drew 2-2 with league leaders Chelsea, although Anna Green did not make it off the bench. Rhea Percival scored twice as Basel beat Lugano 5-0 midweek. Percival's first was a powerful volley into the bottom corner from around the penalty spot, which earned a nomination for goal of the round. And her second in the latter stages of the match came from a bursting run, which split the defence before she calmly beat the goalkeeper. Basel were also in action at the weekend, beating Yverdon 4-0. The two results see Basel remain in second, 4 points off the lead, with a match against Luzerne on Sunday. League action got underway in the US with Abby Ersig leading North Carolina Courage to victory over last season's winners Portland Thorns. North Carolina had the better of the chances and eventually took the lead, winning 1-0. On Sunday, North Carolina faced Rebecca Stott's Sky Blue FC, who had a bye in the first round. Katie Bowen played 90 minutes for Utah Royals in their 1-1 draw with Orlando Pride. Utah opened the scoring in the third minute, but a harsh penalty saw them pegged back. Utah are away to Houston Dash at the weekend, who drew 1-1 with Rosie White's Chicago Red Stars, although White remains sidelined through injury. League action also began in Norway, with Klepp losing 2-1 at home to Arna Bjornar, with Kirsty Yellett playing 90 minutes for the injury hit side. With next week's match postponed, Klepp now face a 3-week wait until the next competitive match at home to newly promoted Lynn. Amy Phillips made her debut for Spartak Subotica in their 9-0 win over Rad Belgrade. Phillips played 59 minutes as Spartak extended the lead at the top of the Serbian league to 5 points with a game in hand, having won all 12 games so far this season, scoring 81 goals and not conceding.
Damn.
Amber Hearn and Michaela Moore both played 90 minutes as Köln lost to third place Freiburg 6-0. Jena also lost 4-2 to fourth place Frankfurt, with CJ Bott getting 64 minutes. Anna Wilkinson scored 2 goals in a friendly match for Vitzjo against Kungsbacka. I have no idea if I said that right, by the way.
I'm just going to let you away with them because they're close enough, I think.
Because you've done this and you know how it is can be at times.
I have done worse.
Colorado Rapids started their first home game of the season finding themselves 2-0 up in the first 8 minutes against Sporting Kansas City. Declan Wynn and Tommy Smith both played 90 minutes for the Rapids, with the second goal coming from a Smith long ball. However, Colorado could not hold on to the lead, conceding an equaliser in stoppage time to draw 2-2. They meet Philadelphia Union on Sunday. Paul and Timmers picked up their first point of the season, drawing away at FC Dallas. Bill Tuiloma made his MLS debut alongside Jake Gleason and received praise for his performance in replacing out-of-favour captain Liam Ridgewell. That's actually a big step up for Bill, because Liam Ridgewell's an ex-Premier League player.
He was in the MLS team of the week.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, actually.
That's good.
Yeah, on debut, that's pretty decent.
Despite going down to 10 men for the final 15 minutes, Portland held on to a 1-1 draw. The Timbers' next match is another potential Kiwi derby away to Chicago Fire, who had a bye this round.
Almost every game is a Kiwi derby now.
Yeah, it's pretty close in the MLS.
What, 9 Kiwis in the MLS now? I think it's 9. Yeah. It was 10, and then someone dropped down. So
yes, you're right. I don't remember who it was, though.
Collier? I don't know. Anyway.
No, Collier's at Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
Oh, true. True. It's
Brown? No.
Yes.
Corey Brown.
Yeah. See, he would know. He knows all this.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. Well, his assistant's coach is not supposed to say guess. He's supposed to say, yes, of course I knew that he was there.
For about 24 hours, we had 10 all whites and the
10 New Zealanders
and 10 potential whites in the MLS. So.
Actually, that would be a good way to do it. It would be the MLS all whites versus the European and all whites with the.
We can always have different squads depending on where the game is.
The Australasian ones can fill in the gaps.
So we can have different camps.
An American camp and a European camp and an Australian camp.
Jose, you can go to one. Dez can go to the other, implementing the same plans.
Hudson can do the one in America.
Moving on. Stefan Marinovic picked up his first clean sheet of the season in Vancouver Whitecaps' 0-0 draw with LA Galaxy. With both sides missing key players, the match had few clear chances and both sides seemed happy to settle for a draw. The Whitecaps are away to Columbus Crew on Sunday. In Boxall's absence, Minnesota United lost to New York Red Bulls 3-0 and face Atlanta United next. To be fair, Minnesota finished bottom last season anyway, so it's not too much of a change whether he's there or not, but he would definitely improve their back line, I think.
Totally.
Greg Draper scored 4 goals for the New Saints as they wrapped up the Welsh Premier League title for the 7th consecutive year with a 5-1 win over Seven Druids. Draper found himself 1-on-1 following a defensive deflection to open the scoring before adding a second with a well-directed header into the top left corner of the goal. 2 further tap-ins saw him round off the win and bring his league tally to 18 goals for the season, despite having previously not scored since New Year's Eve. Draper continues to lead in the Golden Boot race, and in breaking his dry spell, he brought up 100 goals for TNS in his 7 years with the club. Ryan DeVries has continued to build game time for FC Gifu, playing 91 minutes in their midweek 1-1 draw and playing the through ball, which created Gifu's equaliser, before featuring for 61 minutes in their 3-1 win over EMA. Stephen Old returned to action for Morecambe, playing 90 minutes as they drew 0-0 with Lincoln. Henry Cameron played 89 minutes as Limerick went down 1-0 to St Pat's, picking up a yellow card, and he did apologise for getting the name wrong. Jared's a good lad.
I know, exactly. Yeah. He must have felt really bad after that too. Sorry for shaming you on that, Jared. I feel a little bit bad about that. But anyway, we've got it right now, so let's go on.
Nick Sarnev and Charlie Den Grottenhughes.
Just keep going.
Yep, why not?
Met in the Development League as AFC Wimbledon faced Bristol City on Wednesday, with both Kiwis ending the match in goal following an injury to Bristol's only specialist keeper. Ten Grottenhue spent the final 35 minutes in goal as a side who had earlier been reduced to 10 men hung on to a 1-1 draw with both goals coming from penalties.
Nice.
And thank you, Cam. I guess there were quite a few players away on ice duty, so less in the league, so a bit shorter this week. But
thank you, Jared and Optivice, for all of that research.
And thank you very much, Jose, for joining us on a lovely Wellington Wednesday night.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
It's now very dark outside, so I can see why you wrapped up training when you did. But yeah, all the best for the weekend, all the best for next week, and hopefully the game's coming after that as well. So always a pleasure having you on the pod.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
And thanks to Frosty and Cam for joining me. Dave, we'll hopefully be back next week. He had a pre-season game that he was managing his team for tonight, so couldn't make it down, but he'll be in Auckland on Sunday and we'll be able to talk about that next week. So from the 4 of us here and Dave, it's a very good night. Thank you for listening. Wayward Shots Hidden in the Club Rooms bring you.
Watson realising that Paddy was up here brings you.
Severe lack of semen padang in the Kiwis Overseas section brings you.
Can I find another football job brings you.
Yeah, the Roys brings you.